Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio. Friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Amos Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist, cat whisperer, and Fiji water girl sweetheart. Please call me.
And I'm Matthew Ramsey, beer in the headlights and burger condimentalist. This week we are joined by none other than Rob Sonderman, founder of Federalist Pig. Right around the corner in Adams Morgan. As of late, Rob has been slathered with a number of accolades, many of which naming him the burnt end, in a good way, of DC's pitmasters. Welcome, Rob.
Happy New Year, Rob.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Also, Happy New Year to everyone listening.
I'm very excited about the fact that we're drinking cold Victoria beer right now.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty.
Jumping right into the shift drink. Obviously, none of us are doing dry January.
All the difference a year makes. Yeah.
I did mention before that I don't know if dry January is... I mean, a lot of people are doing dry January.
It's more popular than ever. I heard people are making... Like, their bar managers are making dry January drink menus now.
Yeah, there's a huge trend towards low ABV and non-alcoholic beverages out there. Seed Lip is a brand that's making no alcohol spirit, which doesn't really make sense to me, but it's still a great product.
Happy New Year. I think at Shift Drink we're finally recovering from our Jason Mader episode. It was
took 3 weeks to do that, but yes.
But I was happy to see that caviar has made it onto more of Meats and Foods items as of the new year.
What else other than chili? Frito pie.
Yeah,
Meats and Foods does an annual New Year's Day celebration.
Meat and Foods is begrudgingly getting bougie.
Man, I had a Frito pie yesterday from over there. I didn't know caviar was an available edition.
No, to be fair, you got to bring your own caviar.
It's still unauthorized. Yeah. Very unauthorized. Very XXX.
We're at risk of getting banned right now, I think, but.
We are drinking Victoria beer. This is your choice, Matthew.
Oh yeah. So we kind of took Rob. So we asked Rob what his shift drink is, and you, Rob, said.
Normally, when I'm out, I like a good mezcal drink, and then after a shift, or if I'm at a good dive bar, there's nothing better than a good cheap beer and a cheap shot to go along with it. So seems like you guys kind of took that and ran with it, which I'm excited
local
to
Gansett,
try.
Local Gansett, yeah. So I was at my. Favorite little Latin wine store over on 7th Street in Shaw.
Gran Cata.
And I couldn't find the mezcal I wanted, so I ended up with Sotol, which I love. Now, Sotol is produced in the same way as mezcal, where it's very often roasted. But it's not actually agave. It's a totally different plant.
Yes. What is the Latin pronunciation of that plant, Matthew?
There's no way I'm saying that out loud.
Decillerion wheeleri.
Oh, okay.
The whole practice of that one.
Now, while Sotol does kind of mature in that same age range of like 10 plus years, it can be harvested multiple times, unlike regular agave.
So I can see this is clearly not, but do they make like barrel aged versions of this as well, like they would with agave?
I'm not sure, honestly.
Or tequila or mezcal.
The amount of Sotol that we get in this country usually is like
way lower.
Yeah, we have like three labels that I can think of.
And it's very much like agave, where some agave spirits are barrel aged, but for the most part, a lot of them are just kept clear.
Yeah.
Either glass bottle, glass aged. And it really, that actually does a trick. It really, that is enough to mellow out a lot of the flavors. In this case, though, we are sullying the Sotol a little bit with green chartreuse.
50-50. Or like 48-52.
Yeah. Two parts, one part.
The beauty of a good hand pour.
This is kind of a riff on a classic shot, a DC classic shot called the Mez Truce, that Saeed Haddad over on 14th Street, a 14th Street regular, came up with.
Soul Truce?
Yeah, I like that.
Nice. And also, while we're about to celebrate here, Rob, you had a birthday yesterday.
I did have a birthday yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. There.
They all
good
love you.
All those buttons to push.
They love
back there.
You. Do you have a thing you do on your birthday? Is there any traditions or?
Not particularly. I'm pretty used to working on my birthday most of the time,
yeah,
as I'm sure you guys can understand being in the industry as well, but had the day off yesterday, so went and hit up Meats and Foods, as I said, and got too many Cholitos and jalapeno chicken sausages.
Nice.
Took them over to my parents' house and had a little thing with them for lunch, and then took a nap, and then went out to Fogo de Chao.
Right on.
Last night, so.
Yeah, we were talking about. I've never done the Brazilian steakhouse situation.
No, have I.
Any recommendations?
I mean, I think it's a pretty good bang for your buck as far as steakhouses go in terms of a value proposition. That's always something that I'm looking for when I'm going out to eat sometimes. Obviously, it doesn't necessarily matter on your birthday quite as much, or you try to not make it matter.
Right.
But, you know, you got a good selection of meats. You know, most of the time you go to a steakhouse, you got to at least bring someone else with you or a couple of other people with you if you want to try a bunch of different stuff.
Things.
But that's a good way to go and be able to try a bunch of different things. And I feel like they do a good job of preparing the meat simply well, and then, you know, they have an endless bar of salads and stuff like that that you want to try to do your best to avoid.
Right on. Yeah, exactly. It's all the filler stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we get too deep into talking about meat.
Yeah.
Deep meat.
I'm already starting to get the sweats.
I am very hungry right now. Let's do a little bit of recap of what's been going on in the food news all around the world.
Yeah.
What caught your eye?
Well, I mean, I think this caught the world's eye is the egg roll.
This caught my eye.
Egg roll squirrel. He's the new pizza rat.
There is the new pizza rat. There's many other versions of it. I heard there's like I saw churro rats recently. There's a falafel one hanging out there, but now it's an egg roll rat. Egg roll squirrel. There's a video going around of a squirrel in a tree nibbling on an egg roll very ardently.
Not his first egg roll, I could tell. Oh, it's amazing.
We'll post it online. Actually, if you go to our Instagram, I have a small poll on whether the egg roll squirrel represents our new spirit animal of 2019 or the coming sign of the apocalypse. And right now, spirit animal's winning.
Okay. But I mean, definitely not the squirrel's first egg roll. This guy knew what he was doing.
No, I think he's got a source.
Or girl. Could be a girl squirrel.
Mm-hmm. Another New York news piece. Flatiron Lounge finally closes. Flatiron Lounge, for a lot of bartenders, represents the beginning, one of the beginning harbingers of the New York cocktail renaissance. And they... it was led by Julie Rayner and Susan Fedroff, and they kind of really espoused everything about the New York cocktail industry. They didn't do the kind of fancy bartender speakeasy type thing. They went and actually made cocktails for the public in a very welcoming and accessible atmosphere.
Straws are officially banned in D.C. Those seeking plastic fixes will have to go elsewhere. I think this is a very good thing, even though it takes about maybe 5 minutes for a straw to go bad. There's nothing like wet paper. I just like...
Yeah.
I'm not a straw fan anyways, but yeah. This is just another reason for me not to drink out of a straw.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Going over to the West Coast, Thomas Keller has opened up a new restaurant.
Woot woot.
Yep. La Calenda, which is his version of Oaxacan cooking.
Ooh. Apparently, I heard he'll be having Sotol and chartreuse cocktails.
I hope
there.
So. I think we're
on something new here.
We will send him a boomerang.
By the way, what do we think? It's pretty
early. It's pretty tasty.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
It's definitely tamped down on the smoke factor. It's super fruity, which is great.
It is super fruity, yeah.
Yeah, fruit and mezcal just naturally go well together.
Nice.
I was wondering to throw some acid in here, but it doesn't actually
need
it.
Yeah, I don't think it needs anything.
No. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that kind of sums things up for this week.
Yeah.
It's the beginning of a new year. Speaking of which, we've been doing this over a year now.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Happy anniversary. This is episode 41, I believe, in total, but season 4 of Full Service Radio, and our second year.
Yeah. Mustaches have come and gone and been grown back again. We want to thank all of our listeners. It's been really fun having
you
guys. It's
been a great ride, yeah.
And all your thoughts. All right, well, we've talked about our shift drink. Rob, let's kind of cut to it. And I texted you on the phone about an hour ago. I don't know if you got this or not.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Okay. We do like to play a game called Two Truths, One Lie.
Yeah. I know.
Made me pretty nervous. Two truths, one lie. Got how it is.
Now, if you're not ready for this, we can come back to this.
I mean, I guess I'm as ready as I'll
okay.
ever be.
Okay, all right, all right. I think I'm as ready. You understand the concept?
I think I do. All right. I think I do.
All right, beautiful.
All right. You guys ready?
Yeah, we're going right. I'm ready to win. It's the new year.
Okay. So, once when I was 9 years old, in one sitting, I ate 60 New England steamer clams and a whole lobster. When I was in high school...
Wow. I don't even know how to like process that. Okay.
When I was in high school, I convinced one of my best friends to steal his dad's 61 Ferrari and take it out for a joyride. And later on, luckily, we were in the car, but we accidentally rolled it off their porch.
Wait a second. I know this plot.
Finally, I was once on a cooking game show hosted by Ice-T and Coco.
Oh, man. I wanted to see the third one. I wanted that one to be true. Second one, that's Ferris Bueller, right?
Thank you for making this one very easy for us.
I'm sorry.
We appreciate it. And that's a win. We start off the year with a win. Number two is the lie, right?
Number two is the lie.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But like sweet shout out to Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, good one, good movie.
Cameron and his hijinks.
For all your kids out there who might be listening and don't know what we're talking about,
Ferris Bueller's a movie.
It's a movie. Matthew Broderick and his escapades in Chicago.
Yeah. All right, but let's talk about this cooking show.
It was a little bit of a weird situation. So back when I was working with D-City Smokehouse, we went on the show, and I think it was a pilot episode. But it was kind of a setup because they had us basically ship up the ingredients for one of our more popular sandwiches, and then they had like their food stylist put it together, and then they tasted the sandwich. And you know, we didn't have any idea what the other the people who were being judged were bringing.
Was that a barbecue themed show?
Yeah, it was a barbecue themed show. And there were two other barbecue places. Like one I think was in Atlanta, and the other one I think I can't remember where the other one was. But you know, we had our one sandwich, which was pretty damn good sandwich with pork belly and turkey and avocado, and one of our more popular sandwiches there.
What's that one called?
That one was called the Meaty Palmer sandwich.
Ah, the Meaty Palmer.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Pretty good sandwich.
Hell yeah.
Still a good sandwich. So we look over, and the other team to the left of us has, you know, mac and cheese and collard greens and ribs and wings. I'm like, how are we supposed to win with just a sandwich?
Right.
And then, you know, they come up to take a bite, and his wife, Coco, says, oh, I don't even really like bread. I'm like, oh, okay, so we're like doomed from the start. But it was pretty fun to, you know, go and meet them. And
right on.
Ice-T is a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
As cool as he looks on TV.
Oh, my God. He's been doing what? The crime shows recently, right? That's his
Law and Order.
That's his bread and butter.
Yeah. He's gone to the other side from the F the police to being the police.
Amazing.
Well, in recent years, after D-City Smokehouse, now that you're at Federalist Pig, you have been kind of lapsed. Slathered on with a lot of awards and accolades.
Yeah, we've definitely been pretty lucky to have been recognized by
House of Cards fortune. Named you best barbecue in DC.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool shout out from them.
That's awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Was that you guys? Did you guys know that was coming?
Well, we had a little bit of an inkling. I want to say I can't remember when this came out, when the actual show aired, but I want to say it was in November or late October. But they came to us in like March or April. And just like on a Tuesday, we're closed. They emailed us, hey, we want a bunch of food for Wednesday. And that was basically that. So we, you know, it was like maybe six racks of ribs cut up and, you know, a bunch of different sides. And then we didn't hear anything from him after that. And then all of a sudden, like, one of our regulars hit me up on Facebook. Hey, you guys are on the season finale of House of Cards.
Right on.
Like, wait a second. This just came out today. So you watched, like, whatever, 12 episodes and in one night.
Yeah, I usually like to delay those by at least a day, so like not to give away my whole true Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you took over for, on the show at least, for Freddy's.
I'm trying
not to give away any too many spoilers, which is
Freddy's is like, that's like, that goes back to like, what, season two, though, right?
Season two. Yeah. Season two. And that was supposed to be very representative of old school DC barbecue. Do you know why, do you, any inkling why they chose you?
I don't know. I mean, even at D-City, I felt like people were calling that place, you know, like Freddy's.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe they were, I'm not exactly sure why they chose Federalist Pig, but, you know, as far as I understand from the woman who we were in contact with on the show, there was one or a handful of people who were part of the show that had come in and thought that we were worthy of that praise, which I felt pretty good about. And it was definitely a pretty sweet spot. You know, they had our logo and bag there for like a good minute or so at the end of the show.
That's
and
awesome.
Eating the ribs and everything. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Let's talk about being a pit master. How does one arrive at such a sweet LinkedIn job title?
Yeah, it is a pretty sweet job title. I have a difficulty calling myself a master of anything just because I feel like once you start giving yourself those kind of titles, you aren't eager enough and you don't have that hunger to kind of start keep getting better. But it's a lot of hard work, you know, a lot of long hours, overnights, and you know, there's
I feel like a lot like of half studying. A barbecue is overnight, right? Like
I mean, luckily now I've got a really great team working with me. I've got a guy that's been working with me for numerous years now that comes in at 2 o'clock in the morning every day that we're open. And is manning the pits, and every now and again I've got to work that shift too, which I actually really enjoy.
Sure.
Pretty peaceful, because as you guys both know also, the day-to-day grind of being in there and dealing with hundreds of people every day can be wearing. So sometimes, you know, being alone and just prepping for 8 or 10 hours is pretty nice. But it can definitely be difficult.
I mean, I remember I had to the privilege to accompany the Bad Saint crew down to Buxton Hall, down in North Carolina, and I got to meet their overnight person, and they always lathered them on with so much praise and gave them a lot of beers because that was a person that had to come in at 11 o'clock.
It's a lot of trust for me to have to be able to let somebody else kind of.
Absolutely.
Take that over and know that my reputation is in their hands. And, you know, I'm sure it's the same for them and, you know, anyone cooking barbecue.
Is this something that is kind of gained over time? Is it an actual certification process?
I don't think that there's a certification process yet, but maybe someday there will be, I'm sure.
I want to see that movie on Netflix.
I'm sure some culinary school will come out with a pitmaster certification.
The barbecue's the SOM answer to barbecue. Yeah.
Well, people have been doing it for years and decades, and at what point do you say that you're a pitmaster?
Yeah, I feel like many thousands of briskets and many tens of thousands of racks of ribs later, maybe you can start to call yourself that. I mean, luckily, I was fortunate enough to work at Hill Country for a couple of years when it first opened up. And Federalist Pig, we're pretty crazy busy for the size of the space we are. But, you know, over there, I was, you know, over the course of the couple of years I worked there, there was many tens of thousands of briskets that I got to put my hands on. And, you know, that place, I don't know what kind of sales numbers they do now, but I will never forget doing a $75,000 Fourth of July there.
Oh my God.
My last Fourth of July there. It was a pretty, pretty crazy day. A lot of brisket and ribs getting cut up.
I can kind of assume that, especially since you mentioned brisket quite a bit, there's, and one of the kind of quintessential signals of a really great brisket is the smoke ring. But you can't necessarily cut that open while you're cooking it. What other things as a pit master do you look for, and as an identifier that your brisket is going well?
There's obviously like a general time and temperature that you're looking for, and then really it's just all about feel. I mean, I haven't put a thermometer in pretty much anything in quite a long time. I just have a pretty good idea about what it's supposed to feel like when it's ready and what it's supposed to look like. Brisket's definitely pretty tough because it's definitely the most difficult cut of meat to cook. Obviously, it's two different meats that kind of you got to kind of cook slowly together in order to make sure that they're both done at on or about the same time. And the difference in, you know, cooking it at 200 degrees, it might take 16 hours to cook the same brisket that if you're cooking at 240 degrees, might only take 10 hours.
Right.
And you can still get them done and done well.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, a matter of how much time do you have to cook this brisket.
Is this why brisket is often considered the, you know, the gold standard of barbecue?
I would say so.
Because
the amount of time that it takes to cook it, the amount of repetitions that it takes to get it done right and consistently.
Right.
And then I feel like it just kind of, it goes south quicker than most of the other cuts.
Ah, interesting.
Like, an overcooked rack of ribs, I feel like, still tastes pretty good, but an overcooked brisket is going to be pretty bad
just
most
dry.
Of the time.
Yeah. technique-wise, I saw in your Eater article from I guess when you were opening up Federalist Big, that you weren't like 100% satisfied with your brisket at that point in time.
Yeah, I still feel that way, and I feel like it's just until we get the kind of smokers that I have over there, it's still going to just be one of those things that, and really, like, all the meats across the board could be better.
Okay.
You know, we're dealing with a smoker
and a master nut and satisfied. I know, it's like, my meat is shit.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
best barbecue in DC. And he's like, we're not there yet.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like,
which is admirable.
Yeah. I'm not going to be probably never satisfied, honestly. But, you know, we're dealing with a smoker that, based on the constraints of the space and the regulations based on the hood and the space that we took over, I had to have a gas-assisted smoker.
So it's like a hybrid.
And most barbecue restaurants use these kind of smokers nowadays anyway, at least the ones that are in bigger cities, just because of the space constraints. I mean, it's great in terms of being able to slide into a regular hood line and cook a decent quantity of food, but the quality is just, you know.
I read it was also because of regulations.
Yeah, so using like an all wood fired smoker, you have to have a specific kind of hood, and it's got to be regulated by the fire marshal in a slightly different way than the one that we have.
Yeah,
which is basically sold as like a gas oven.
Yeah.
That you just feed wood into, and it's
smoke assist.
Yeah. So it's, I think the food that we make is pretty good, but the smoke level just isn't quite there. And, you know, as I'm sure you guys maybe see as well, you know, Tim Carman, as many times as he puts me on like the lists of, you know, cheap eats or best barbecue, he's always got to needle me just a little bit on the smoke level of all the food. So,
well, I mean,
it keeps me humble.
When you're tasting barbecue from other places, like what are the things you're looking for? Like what separates great barbecue from like okay?
Good? That's a good question. I think a lot of places fall short on seasoning level, and then a lot of places just fall short on consistency. I mean, in any food service or any industry, I feel like consistency is like the hardest part, and being able to do like a lot of places do like one or two things really, really well, and you know, maybe the sides suck or, you know, they got really good ribs, but they're, I would never go for chicken or turkey or whatever else. So I feel like I pride myself on trying to be able to have multiple different options and have them all be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Which is pretty tough. I normally try to not judge a place on their barbecue sauce because I don't think that it should be necessary, but DC, and I feel like most people think barbecue is about the sauce.
Yeah.
And even though I don't believe it is, you still gotta, you know.
Oh, that breaks my heart when I hear that.
Well, I think that's a good jumping off point. But let's take a quick break. Mm-hmm. We're gonna step out for a second, and when we come back, we're gonna dive into some sauces.
Sure.
All right. You're listening to Shift Drink. I'm Matthew Ramsey, Eddie Kim, and Rob Sonderman.
Every time, you come around, you ease my mind, you make everything feel fine. Worry about those comments, I'm way too numb, it's way too dumb,
I get those goosebumps every time. I need the Heimlich, throw that to the side, yo. I get those goosebumps every time, yeah. When you're not around, when you throw that to the side, yo.
This is a remix by Kido. It's K-I-E-D-O. Check him out on SoundCloud.com/Kido. We'll be right back. I'm zipping low key in Onyx, find a rider. When I'm pulling up right beside you, pop star Lil Mariah. When I take ski game wireless, throw a stack on the bob. Never snap and chat to Molly. She fall through plenty, her and all her guineas. Yeah, we at the top floor, right there, all doing it. Yeah, oh no, I can't fuck with y'all. Yeah, when I'm with my squad, I cannot do no wrong.
All right. You're listening to Shift Drink, recording live out of the Lion. I'm Matthew Ramsey.
I'm Eddie Kim.
And we have Mr.
Rob Sonderman.
Rob Sonderman in the house of Federalist Pig. All right, before we left, we were talking about sauces. You guys feature a lot of different sauces, from the sweet and the smoky to the tangy. Is subscribing to kind of one style sauce in this day and age, is that barbecue aside? That one read better on paper.
I think it's kind of a it's a losing proposition no matter what, I feel like. I would love to just have like one or two different kinds of sauces,
right.
But then you have, well, where's this kind of sauce? Where's that kind of sauce? Because, you know, every kind of region has their own particular style of barbecue sauce. And honestly, like, I've tried barbecue most places in the country and I like them all, as long as, you know, there's someone in the kitchen that cares. You know, for me, there's good and bad barbecue. There's not Carolina, Texas, Kansas City. You know, I feel like nowadays, like, most places that are doing it well, we're all doing mostly the same kind of thing outside of the sauce, maybe.
But I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, you do go to Carolina, you're not going to get Texas sauce mixed into the bunch, right? Like, we're DC. Like, we're the city of, like, where other people come from.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm definitely in the minority as being someone that's from DC. So we have to definitely do everything we can to try to appeal from the people that come from all over the country to come stay here for 1 or 2 years, and then they're out of here. And
well, being from the area, have you seen any research or have you tasted anything that actually is quintessential DC, like a sauce or a rub or a technique?
You know, I don't know. And as far as I've found, there's not really any particular DC regional style of barbecue. I think maybe if you say like a Chaps pit beef might be the closest thing. And, you know, the only thing that I can figure out as being like a DC regional food staple is like the half smoke or maybe a crab cake or something like that. And
I'm gonna say it, mumbo sauce.
Yeah, mumbo sauce might be the only thing.
And I would love mumbo sauce, but it's kind of the default when it comes to DC. And
well,
I don't want it to be.
Here's the thing, and this has been it's been rated the best mumbo sauce in DC like time again. Yums too. Mm-hmm. And like I've thrown taste tests where like I gather different mumbo sauce. Yums too. Very often have like the best mumbo sauce rated, and I've seen them pour it out of their Cisco container. It's literally honey barbecue sauce. That is mumbo sauce. That's what mumbo sauce means.
I mean, we don't have to be bougie about it. I mean, if it comes out,
but
of a plastic
container. It's not actually mumbo sauce. It's Cisco's honey barbecue sauce.
And they don't add like red 15 to it or something like
that. And we call it mumbo sauce.
I'm glad you mentioned pit beef because that's a Baltimore thing, right?
Yeah. I would say so.
What is pit beef?
Typically, it's like a whole charcoal-fired top round or some kind of roast beef-esque kind of cut. Sliced thin, onions, horseradish, mayo, and that's pretty much it.
That's awesome.
I love that you know
that.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
It's pretty enjoyable.
You guys see a lot of product, move through your guys'. I mean, do you guys get whole animals at a time and break them down?
I wish that we could. I just don't have space in the store to, like, store a whole animal. I have literally 3 reach-in coolers that we just, like, turn over completely, like, almost every day.
Right on. That's impressive.
So it's in as much as I would like to work with more whole animals, it's just not really, like, economical for us to be able to use, like, the other things that come with doing a whole animal butchery. Unfortunately, maybe when we get a bigger space, we can start running some specials of that kind of stuff, but it's just not realistic for us to do.
Well, that seems to be something that's kind of surfaced time again. Are you guys looking at expanding currently?
We definitely are. I'm definitely excited about what we're going to be doing in 2019, but there's not really anything to discuss at this point.
Sure.
We're working on expanding our current location as well as, you know, looking at a second location in or in the immediate DC area.
Awesome. So, we have it here. This is a Shift Drink exclusive. Oh. Exactly. Nothing was revealed. But yeah. Something was revealed.
Matthew and I are wearing our reporter's hats, and we got our notepads out right now.
Yeah.
Actually, well, since we're talking about meat, let's not talk about meat. How about your non-meat options? And, and not just like the sides, but you mentioned that you were interested in jackfruit and breadfruit. Bon Appetit magazine, in their kind of list of trends in 2019 to look for, jackfruit was pretty high on their list. So is that something that
jackfruit is a pretty interesting ingredient? I actually really like that. You know, my wife is Indian, and her mother kind of turned me on to that as kind of a ingredient that's vegan, vegetarian, that you can trick a lot of people with thinking that it's meat if you prepare it in a certain way.
Yeah.
So we've run like jackfruit as like a, you know, a pulled meat sandwich and, you know, mix it with some sauce, put it in the smoker for a little while. It's a little bit difficult to get in terms of, at least from my purveyors.
Sure.
You can't really like get it in its fresh form. And then when I got it in the fresh form, it was not particularly easy to like break down. You know, it's a huge thing,
right? But you can get it from a guy that has to deal with like whole animal.
Yeah, I know. You can get it canned, and the canned stuff like works out pretty well. But it was a little bit difficult for me to get as well, unless I was like, you know, ordering it from Amazon or something, and then it's just kind of a pain. But you know what I've used recently is that kind of Beyond or Impossible meat patty. Like a smoked sloppy Joe out of it, which worked out pretty well, and people seem to be pretty excited about that. But, you know, we've run like tofu and done like a mushroom meatball sandwich, and that's one thing that I feel like we've gotten more feedback on than I ever thought. It was something that we talked about and wanted to make a point of when we opened the store to have vegan and vegetarian options all the time, and that's definitely something that most barbecue places
absolutely overlook. Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, I'm kind of curious what, like, every single cooking technique and every single style of food kind of has a progression and a future to it. What do you see barbecue going towards?
It's an interesting question. You know, I'm not sure. I think, for me, I really love messing around with kind of global flavors. I'm running, like, a sandwich right now that has that smoked top brown that I have used before in a pit beef sandwich, but I'm doing it with like a chimichurri sauce and some smoked tomatoes and kind of making a sandwich out of that. And I've done like kind of an al pastor seasoned smoked pork shoulder for a sandwich that I think is pretty interesting. I think, you know, barbecue in itself, especially like Texas style barbecue, which is for me kind of the pinnacle, which is just like super straightforward, salt, pepper. They're not messing around in any way. I really love that, but I also like to kind of riff a little bit on global flavors mixed in with this.
When I went to Buxton Hall, it was a collaboration between Filipino food and Carolina barbecue.
Yeah.
Is there a restaurant or a single style of food that you want to collaborate with?
I don't know about a particular restaurant, but if I wasn't cooking barbecue, I feel like Mexican is kind of the next thing for me as far as another cuisine that I feel like has a ton of soul and uses a lot of the same flavor profiles, I feel like, as barbecue.
Yeah.
You know, in my barbecue sauces, there's all different kinds of dried chilies, and same with the dry rubs. So, you know, the cumin, coriander, ancho chili powder, guajillo, chipotle chili powder is like, those are things that I use a ton in my cooking.
Yeah.
And I would definitely feel like I could.
Well, I mean, it seems like barbecue is literally a global language. It's something that's done in almost, I guess, I'm guessing every culture.
Every country, slow and low, is represented everywhere.
Yeah, it's basically how we came to eat is meat over fire.
Yeah.
Shitty cuts of meat.
Yeah.
Let's say, I'll be honest, it's like terrible cuts of meat that are impossible
to eat. So it's something that almost everybody can understand. That's really... have you ever experimented with like, say, like... the Mexican, like, in the ground pits with cooking?
In my backyard, I have a little bit. Yeah. It's a little bit more difficult to do that in a restaurant setting, but definitely in the house that I used to live at, I have definitely done, like, you know, a whole pork shoulder or
yeah.
a cow's head.
Matthew's being very humble right now.
I'm not being humble.
Have you? You're being very humble. Yeah. Matthew, was it 2 summers ago?
Yeah. Built a pit.
Built a pit in his back, his Bloomingdale apartment backyard. It wasn't even his own home, which he owns right now, but cook-ass cochinita pibir.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
It was fun. But it's like...
How big of a piece of meat did you use?
We did a baby pig, but...
Nice.
I think it was like
banana leaves and all that good
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was like, it was a day. It's barbecue. We started early in the morning and we were eating it at night and... it's a different process. So you're bearing it, and you can't see anything.
I know, and you just got to pray almost that it comes out.
Yeah, exactly. But also, like when it did come out, you're unearthing this beautiful, full cooked piece of meat, and it's dripping off the bones. It was amazing.
Well, Matthew's pretty seasoned. What about someone who's not seasoned? Someone who's just moving into DC and just got a new apartment in Shaw.
Oh yeah,
and they want to start barbecuing somehow.
Are there home hacks?
Where would you start?
Yeah,
the green egg.
The green egg. I haven't used a green egg, but I've used like the Kamado grills before, and they work really well as far as like keeping a steady temperature and using very little fuel, like charcoal or whatever. But for me, like the cooking capacity isn't really all that great for the bang for your buck wise. Like you're going to spend $2,000 on something that you can still only fit like 2 racks of ribs or like a brisket on. So I feel like if you're going to spend that money, you know, and you don't want to have to tend a fire that much, the pellet grills seem to work pretty well, I feel like.
Ah, yeah. Like your Traegers.
Yeah,
and such.
The Traegers I feel like are pretty good, but for me, like a basic offset smoker is what I would want in my backyard. Unfortunately, I had to leave mine behind when I moved out of the house, and I live in an apartment on H Street now. So. But I made some Peking ducks for Christmas dinner.
Right on.
And they're traditionally like roasted over like a wood fire. So I cold smoked them for like an hour and had like a big box that we had gotten a delivery in from Amazon with Christmas presents and set up like a little, I have like a single electric burner that I put some wood chips over right on the porch in our apartment. And I definitely I shouldn't be saying this because I'm sure I could have gotten fined by my apartment building for it.
But. Only Eddie's mom and my parents listen to this.
Yeah, only two listeners. Okay. And then my mom's going to burn down our house.
I'm actually convinced my parents don't listen to this, so. I found that out over Christmas.
But for me, like, cooking barbecue is as much about tending the fire as it is about anything. Like, that's kind of the challenging part is keeping a good controlled fire. So I don't particularly love the pellet smokers, but for someone that wants to be able to cook some barbecue and not have to be going and feeding it fuel every 20 or 30 minutes, the pellet grills work pretty well.
Right on. Right on. I'm currently trying to convince Elizabeth to let me build a smoker in the backyard.
Yeah, man.
Well, a wood burning oven.
You went from bread oven to
smoker. I mean, it's all one and the same. I want bread. I want pizza. Bread.
This time next year, it's going to be.
Where are you guys living?
I'm pretty sure it's going to end up with a store-bought offset smoker. But we bought a place out in East Capitol.
Okay, nice.
So a little bit of a backyard, but. Not great. Big enough to build the...
Over by RFK or...
Yeah.
The hottest, most exclusive seat in DC next year.
That's right.
Matthew's backyard. I want to... You're our first pit master to be on our show so far. I'd really talk about barbecue. I really wanted to bring up David Chang's episode of Ugly Delicious about barbecue.
Ooh, nice.
About barbecuing in America. I guess specifically I wanted to bring up... He has been very open about, apologetic about his mistakes for kind of including a lot of, or not including a lot of non-white pitmasters. Mm-hmm. Are there any like out there that you think they need to get, you know, recognition, or like why is the kind of industry kind of focused slow in one direction?
You're asking me if there are particular pitmasters that need to get recognition?
I think so. I mean, and anything that you kind of aspire to being towards, or you think needs to get recognition?
Hmm. I don't know. I feel like anybody who's doing it well, you know, deserves some recognition. But at the same time, there's plenty of places that are doing it not particularly well. But, you know, I definitely watched that episode when it came out, but I'm not sure if I can recall, like, specific examples. But definitely barbecue, at least in the Americas as it started, was, you know, slaves cooking for however many people. So, and then those same people, when they had an opportunity to start their own business, you know, setting up shop on the street corner, cooking, you know, X amount of racks of ribs in a day. And, right. you know, they had a skill that they had learned and had an opportunity to start their own business, which I think is pretty amazing. And, you know, I think it's definitely has and should always be a food for the people, which I think is something that I really strive to make sure we're capable to stay within like a certain price point. And it's always been like a in the same realm as the soul foods and a kind of a perceived cheap cuisine, which I think should be celebrated. You know, it's easy to always look at the places that you're going to be, you know, spending $150 or $200 for a meal. But, you know, for me, going to a really good Mexican taco place where I'm only going to spend $10 for me and my wife to eat.
Yeah.
Or, you know, going to a good barbecue place or a good, you know, a shawarma place or something. Like, those kind of soul food places are the places that I, like, really enjoy eating. So,
would you be okay if barbecue prices went up? If it was, it became almost like haute cuisine?
I would love it if it became acceptable for them to, but even now, like when I feel like we're in the like middle to low end as far as like price points go for barbecue, people sure. still are like, "What do you mean it's this amount for a pound for brisket?"
People are always gonna
yeah, and you know, unfortunately, most people don't really understand how much time, energy goes into, you know, cooking a brisket.
Well, and I think that's the thing, though, that, like, yeah, it's not factored into the actual price, and it's very often overlooked. It's a labor of love, 100%, like, through and through. Like, and you see that going into other things, but not necessarily, like, oh, yeah, this meat took, like, at least 10 hours to make.
Yeah, and, you know, however many people put their hands on it before it got
right.
to you.
Right.
You know, brisket, as an example, is relatively cheap as far as, you know, like a ribeye or a New York strip goes.
Sure.
But you're going to have a 50% loss, like, immediately, yeah. just based on, you know, the moisture and the fat content. And then you have a dry rub that goes on it, and then wood that's used to cook it, and a couple of different guys.
Yeah, I mean, wood very often is the most expensive part
of
the kitchen.
Yeah, it's definitely expensive. It's not, you know, it's not cheap, and you use a good amount of it in order to make good barbecue. Yeah. So it's,
Do you have a wood preference?
Right now I'm using a lot of red and white oak, because mm-hmm. it has a pretty good, like, relatively heavy smoke profile, but also is, you know, relatively muted as far as, doesn't really give off as much of that bitter acrid flavor. But I can get my hands on it, I really like apple wood, but it's hard to get around here.
Yeah.
I see maple, pear, persimmon, honey locust.
Yeah. So when we first opened, I was I still have a pretty good plug on a lot of good interesting nice. Kinds of wood. And based on that smoker that I was talking about, that is like a gas assisted smoker.
Right.
I wasn't really getting the same amount of like smoke flavor that I wanted with those kind of lighter fruit woods that are really interesting and taste great, but oak is a little bit heavier than most sure. of those, so that's kind of what I've been using lately, just because it gives me a little bit more of a smoke flavor that
right on.
I was getting a lot of crap about not having.
Let's move things along to our next game, little thing we call rapid fire.
Oh no! Time for the payback.
Rapid fire.
Now these are just like. Yeah. it's like just kind of tip of the tongue. First thing that comes to mind. Eddie, why don't you start us off here?
Would you rather be feared or loved?
I guess loved. Yeah.
Eddie, would you rather be feared or loved?
I want to be feared.
Yeah, man. That's okay. A classic Eddie response. what is your favorite Brad Pitt movie?
Fight Club.
Nice. That's a good one.
Would you rather have smelly breath or body odor?
Ooh, that's tough. I feel like both are pretty bad.
That you
I feel
cannot like, fix. You can't fix it.
Okay. I guess I would rather have body odor, I guess. At least in my where I work, you know, I can, you know, a lot of the times at the register, I can immediately note someone that has bad breath.
Yeah.
But body odor is sometimes a little bit, you know, more difficult to...
Bad breath is the worst. It's I think body odor is like offensive, but like in a different way.
You can crop dust that around the restaurant.
Oh, yeah. I think personally I would go body odor.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, favorite cut of beef?
Favorite cut of beef, that's tough. I think my favorite cut of beef to eat is picanha right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would that be?
Picanha is like the top sirloin cap. It's like the classic Brazilian barbecue.
Okay. This is coming. It sounds like birthday talk.
Yeah, here. I know. But if I wasn't doing that, you know, New York strip is definitely up there. Like a good quality prime dry aged New York strip steak. I can definitely be pretty happy with.
We are 7 days into the new year. What has been your favorite meal?
Maybe the Peking duck that I cooked. I guess that was Christmas, so that doesn't count.
Actually, I want to hear about that.
Yeah.
No, screw it.
did you use hair dryers at the end?
Well, actually, I what did I do? So there's kind of like a blanching part that you know, blanch it in hot water, and then there's like a syrup that you marinate with. So I kind of melded those two together and made like the blanching broth the same as the, so I have like a blanching broth with ginger, garlic, and some brown sugar.
Infusing the flavor as it goes.
So you kind of got to parch the skin and get it kind of taut, and then I like had it in my fridge at home for about 4 days before.
Cool.
And then, like I said, I smoked it for about an hour and then like roasted it super high temp in the oven for maybe 45 minutes or an hour and let it rest. And yeah, it came out pretty damn good.
Nice.
I was pretty happy with it. I still want to try the one that they... Or the, not Peking duck, but the roast duck that they make right over here in the wood-fired oven.
Amazing. It's good. Really good. Yeah. Actually, yeah, Eddie and I had it together.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we had it together. We had a nice date.
Rob, what was your first job?
My first job was at a little divey Italian restaurant when I was 14, I guess I started there. So I started as a busboy and then kind of worked on the line and kind of got... fell in love with the industry and just the fast-paced environment there. You know, it was like a pizza, pasta, sandwich kind of place that one of my neighbors ran. And it was a, you know, one summer, hey, Dad, can I get some money? And the answer was no, you need to find a job. Yeah, that was... so, that was that. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Would you rather be a member of the Mafia or Yakuza?
Ooh, man, that's tough.
One means you have tattoos. I don't know that, like the
tattoos and you're missing a pinky and which the mafia you're just kissing each other.
Okay. is missing a pinky like an entry? Is that the entry into the Yakuza?
I think sooner or later you lose a finger in the Yakuza. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe Yakuza. I'm I feel like outside. I'm more of a fan of Japanese food than I am of
Have you ever experimented with Binchotan?
No. I haven't.
What's that?
Yeah, I need
it's Japanese charcoal. For yakitori.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with it, but I have not used
it. It's not really slow and low. It's more like direct and hot, but very even.
Yeah, I haven't yet.
Was there an aha barbecue moment that kind of led you into this smoky path?
Not exactly, but I always like enjoyed, even, you know, when I was a teenager, I think my parents bought me a smoker when I was like 15 years old.
Wow. What a nerd.
Yeah, I know, right? So it was definitely something that I like really enjoyed doing in my backyard, but you know, and then I went to the CIA and had a great time there and learned a ton.
You took the Pitmaster 101 class.
Pitmaster 101 was like one day out of like the whole time. And then I actually ended up doing like a research paper on the history and cultural impact of barbecue in the United States, which is kind of interesting.
That's awesome.
But you know,
is that available online anywhere?
It's not available online, but I gotta go and find it and publish it somewhere. But culinary school, you know, spits you out into the kind of French fine dining world. That's kind of what everyone's kind of driven into, and did that for a couple of years, and then ended up working in Boston at this country club. Which was a little bit soul crushing, but pretty good job as far as pay goes.
Yeah.
But part of my duties every day, in addition to setting up my station, was doing family meal for like the entire staff of this country club.
Right on.
And there was, for some reason, like no budget, which meant there was an endless budget.
Yeah.
So, you know, I started doing collard greens and cornbread and making ribs and stuff. And these people were like, what the hell is this? Like, they never even had collard greens.
Wow.
Which is cool. Kind of interesting. And they had like a smoker there that, you know, no one ever used. So I started messing around with that a little bit. And, you know, the chef there laughed at me the first time I said, you know, I think I want to have a barbecue restaurant. But after a year of working there, you know, when I told him I was leaving and coming back to D.C., it's like, you know, you should make sure that barbecue is the only thing that you're messing around with for the
rest
of
your life.
Right on. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Awesome.
My last question is, what is your deathbed meal?
That's tough. I don't know if I really have a deathbed meal. I remember that being one of the questions, and I did not think about that. Maybe like a good bowl of pho actually might be in the conversation. Nice.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Meat being cooked right in the broth. It's kind of the other way around. That's great.
Antithesis of you.
Do you have a favorite place in D.C.? Or not outside of D.C.?
Yeah, well, Pho 75 is kind of my personal go-to. And, you know, I'm pretty bad about sometimes reading Yelp reviews of other places and stuff. And for me, like, my favorite part about that place, not only, like, that I think that they have great pho, is that there's no frills about the service. They point at you, you go sit over there, and, you know, in 3 minutes, you got your pho in front of you, and you're just going to town. But the only bad reviews I feel like they have are like, you know, the guy didn't talk to me. And, you know, he just pointed at a seat and told me to go over there.
But you got your noodles in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Pho 75, there's one in Arlington.
Yeah.
It's been around the D.C. area for a long time.
Well, I think it's time for a little Mary Fuck Kill.
Fuck Mary Kill.
Okay, so for this question, we decided to make it easy/tough for you. It's very barbecue friendly. We're talking the Holy Trinity.
If we said the Holy Trinity, do you know what we're talking about?
Of barbecue? I would imagine you're talking about ribs, brisket, and sausage, but I don't know
for
sure.
Wow, yeah.
Yes.
Can we get a ding for that, Jack? There we go.
One of the people who gave you very, very glorious accolades, Mr. Vaughn?
Yeah.
Daniel Vaughn. Yeah. He mentioned in his article that the Holy Trinity. And that's something new that I learned.
Yeah.
Is that your Holy Trinity?
Well, I'm not sure if it's holy, but it's definitely the Texas Trinity. I think of that. I would say so. I think that it's definitely maybe a little bit different here in town. Like, I don't know if sausage maybe gets the same
recognition. I feel like wings probably replace sausage,
Yeah, probably so.
And your wings, by the way, are amazing.
Yeah, I like our wings, too. And people seem to like them, so.
All right, so this is Mary Fuck Kill, the Holy Trinity. So sausage, brisket, and ribs.
Yeah. So based on that it's, like, the most difficult to cook and... I would probably get rid of brisket pretty quickly. I mean, it definitely has a special place in my heart, but...
The brisket.
Yeah.
You're not Federalist beef.
Yeah. Ribs, I think, are the one thing that I don't think I could live without. Okay. So that'd probably be the Mary. And then I guess maybe it's a little too phallic, but sausage would be...
This is another Shift Drink expose. Rob Soderman. Sausage. Fucker.
I mean, you kind of walked him right into it.
I'm waiting for that typewriter sound effect.
That's a good headline. Okay. Well, awesome. Awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Rob,
for having me.
For all of our listeners, thank you so much for listening. It's been an amazing year. You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. TJ Lewis, you haven't like commented in a while. Let's get back on that, man.
Who's TJ Lewis?
He commented on our iTunes.
Oh, great.
And he's a wonderful cook over at Pineapple Pearls.
Oh, great. don't forget to throw us a review. iTunes. A special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux for our intro music. I think he's cooking up
a new sauce.
A little new sauce for us.
Yeah, it's sounding good.
I think a little spacey.
We're excited.
And DJ Rectech for our hilarious sound effects. next week, we don't know who we're bringing on next week.
Definitely Bill Murray, but we don't know why.
Yeah, he's yeah.
Have you read these comments lately?
Bill Murray's
comment? No, wait.
No, Jack.
Latest Please. Comment here is, my favorite parts are when Eddie makes an awful pun and then everyone makes fun of him. Oh. It's good stuff.
Just to let everyone know, they're not my puns. I'm not a punny guy.
Fair enough. All right, guys. Until next week, you're listening to Ship Drink.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts, covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.